see the red light, that means we're live. So, new quarter, new topic, holiness. I know that's not what the word on the board says. We'll get there in just a sec. So, thanks for joining us. I think we have 12 Wednesday classes this quarter, so we have 12 weeks to figure out what holiness means. And so, to start off, I just want to open it up and ask you, what does the word holy mean? Short answer, long answer, examples, what do you got?
Set apart.
Set apart. Any other?
It's a divine requirement.
Divine requirement, I like that.
Set apart for something.
Set apart for something. Okay. All right, we go home. that's good.
God is holy.
God is holy. So you can maybe put him on the definition side of things too. There actually is a little bit of variety of opinion on what you can include in the definition of holy or not, which I thought was interesting as I was trying to dig into this. But I do think from what I've found that the most basic idea behind anything you can fit into the box holy is that of separation or distinction, particularly for God. You know, it's not just separated just over anything. It's something separated for God. And I think that we can see this in some of the passages that use this term. So I want to look a few places and then we can talk some more about it in just a few minutes. So the first place I want to go is Genesis chapter 2. Depending on your translation, you may not find the word holy here, but the word holy does hide here. If you have the ESV, the NIV, or the CSV, you'll have our word, but if you have something else, you won't. So can I get somebody to read for us? Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Whoever wants to, whenever you got it, go.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation.
Thank you, Rick. Rick reads from the ESV, I think. and so other translations, like I have the New American Standard, uses the word sanctified there. Or if you have the King James, I think it uses hallowed. And then the next part of the verse, or that verse there, 3, tells us why. Because... what was the reason that the seventh day was holy?
Sanctified.
Because God rested. So how does that make it holy? What does that... How does that work?
Because he set apart.
It was purposed for that.
It was purposed for that.
It was different from the previous 6 days.
Right. So if we're working with the idea of distinction or separation, the seventh day was different from the others in that there was no work done on the seventh. He rested from all of the work. And then I think we see the same, we don't bump into the word again, I think through the rest of the Genesis, it'll come back up in Exodus a few times. Exodus 19 is the next place I'd like to look. We're passing over a few uses of the word holy, but this one makes it pretty easy to see. Exodus 19, could I get somebody else to read verses 3 through 6, please, when you get there?
While Moses went up to God, the Lord called him out of the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the people of Israel, You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel.
Thank you, Dale. So this is, you know, right as God is inviting the people of Israel into the covenant with him at Mount Sinai. God brought them out, and then we have this, Exodus 19 is where they, you know, agree to take part of the covenant. So here's what God lays out at the beginning. Where do you see this idea of distinction or separation in what God told the people here?
If they obey his voice, because other people aren't.
Right. Yeah. You see it in any of the other language?
No. The
circumcision.
Comparison to the Egyptians.
Contrast to the Egyptians, Troy?
He called them his possession.
Right.
His treasure.
His treasured possession. So, I mean, he says, all the earth is mine. It's all mine. But you'll be special. You're the treasured possession. So different from all the other nations. They're distinct in that they keep the commandments of God. Thus, they are God's holy nation. And then we obviously aren't going to read all the instructions, but think about how the tabernacle was constructed, right? And what those different places were called. You had that outer court, and only certain people could go into there. But then there was the holy place in that, and only priests could go in. And then there was the Holy of Holies, or the most holy place in there, and the high priest only went in there once a year. And so there were sort of layers to it. There were different levels, I guess, of holiness, if you'd call it. And so there were these boundaries between the places that maintained that distinction. This place is the holy place, this one's the Holy of Holies, and the stuff around it isn't. And that didn't have to do with the spot of ground that it was on, because remember, the tabernacle moved around. So it was just maintaining these barriers and moving these barriers to the next place where God showed them. And then the priests were tasked with maintaining that holiness. Remember, they were charged to kill people who would violate the tabernacle in ways that would violate the holiness of it. And we can keep going, but I think you see that idea pretty clearly, that the separation or distinction sits underneath all of this. And we are going to go beyond that. I mean, we got the whole quarter to do it. But holiness doesn't stand by itself in the Bible. There's a whole family of words, I guess, that sort of fit together. So, and they're not all exactly the same. We're not, you know, trying to find equivalents, but things that sort of fit into the same category. So what words come to mind that you think of that convey a similar idea?
Sanctified.
Sanctified, that's one of them. What else?
Peculiar.
Saint. What, you know the meaning of saint?
I mean, it's from the same word. I mean,
The word saint is literally, it's like the noun version of holy. It's the same word. Someone else over here said something.
Peculiar.
Peculiar. Interesting word.
Consecrated.
Consecrated.
Sanctified.
Selected.
Selected. What else?
Elect.
Elect. I think there's a few others that go along with it too.
Chosen.
Chosen.
Sacred.
Sacred, yes.
Royal priesthood.
Ooh, royal, the idea of a royal priesthood. Good.
Somebody's even referred to without blame. People without blame.
We said saved.
I haven't said that, but I think that would work.
Sinless. Without blame.
Sinless.
People of the covenant.
People of the covenant, good. So let me give you a hint for one of the other ones that I think we don't always associate, but it's helpful to put these two together. The book in the Bible uses the word holy more than any other, by a very wide margin, no matter what translation you use. Far and away, the book in the Bible that uses the word holy and deals with the concept of holiness is
Leviticus.
Ooh. Leviticus. And so what kind of stuff is in Leviticus? What
priests.
Stuff about the priests?
Really interesting stuff.
Laws.
Rules and laws? What kind of rules and laws?
You shall be holy before I am.
Specific rules.
Well, there's a specific stuff. A lot of the language is about clean and unclean, too. We have these big sections, you know, these animals are clean, these are not clean. And we'll,
pure and impure.
Pure and impure, right. So I think those words, we don't necessarily connect with holiness, but they do certainly fit into that same category of ideas.
I assume perfect and complete also are similar.
Yeah.
Spotless.
Right. And so once you broaden this word and consider the concept and all the different varied forms, it's easy to see that this is an idea that could have trails all over the place. So we're really only going to scratch the surface tonight, so don't feel disappointed if we don't, you know, blow your mind with anything. And if you make a connection, we don't get to it, make a note of it or something, we'll be glad to come back and talk about it later. And I want to be careful not to limit the word holiness to separation or distinction, because that's just the root idea. There's all this other stuff that still ties down to that, but there's this other stuff that goes with it that we can talk about too. So how do some of these other ideas that we've mentioned connect to holiness? So if we think about moral purity, how does that connect to the idea of separation?
Separating yourself from the world and the things around it.
Right.
The flesh.
What?
And separating from the flesh.
Oh, yeah.
To a more spiritual.
Rick?
When you said Leviticus, it made me think of there's the special and then there's the common.
Mm-hmm.
There's the clean, there's the unclean.
Right.
So moral purity fits in with that.
Yeah, we did miss that one. The common and uncommon. Holy is the...
Holy
sometimes the antithesis. The antithesis of holy is sometimes rendered as common. It's not holy and unholy, it's holy and common, or even profane, which has a stronger negative connotation than it maybe would have originally. But, okay, so think about this too. How does the ritual cleanness of the old law that we referenced, what does that have to do with separation?
Choose what they deemed, you know, to be that perfect, for example, lamb or whatever they were sacrificing. They had to make a separation of this one's the best one versus the rest.
Yeah. What else?
Not touching or handling anything that was unclean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Being purified typically with blood.
Purified by blood.
I guess it makes me think they were unique because they were the only ones that were following this set of rules.
Yeah. It'd be weird to limit yourself to these things. And then think about this too. How does the holiness of God connect to the idea of separation? Or distinction, whichever word you want to use.
I think of my thoughts are way above your thoughts and my ways are way above your ways. I mean, he is so much different than us that that distinction, that gap, that chasm between us and him is part of the definition of his holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about idols, and he's distinct in the sense of there's no one else in his class, in his
right.
No peers.
Absolutely. What else? Okay.
Going back to Exodus chapter 19 that we just read a few minutes
mm-hmm.
ago, one of the words that's used down a little bit lower where we were talking was this idea of kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that for a second, what God did is through Israel is he created himself a people that he called a kingdom, and he separated that kingdom from all of the other kingdoms,
mm-hmm.
and then he set laws in place for that kingdom to make sure that they were staying separated from everything else.
Right.
So the whole concept of what God is setting up here through Exodus and then going all the way through the New Testament
mm-hmm.
is this idea of his own possession of his people that are completely separated and cut off from the rest of the world that don't follow him.
Right. Thank you.
Yes? I was just going to say, it makes me think of the verse that says that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. And so he's not even going to be associated with any of
mm-hmm.
it at all. And so with any sort of sin, common or what, and when I think of common, I think of what we would probably see as normal
mm-hmm.
and ourselves to be different.
Yeah. Good, thank you.
He gave us the right to be called the sons of God
mm-hmm.
and the ability to approach the authority to approach him, because not just anyone can approach him.
Absolutely. We'll talk more about that probably next week. But that connects into this idea too. And so I just wanted to do those few things to see that even these things that may not immediately seem connected to this idea but are still tied to holiness, you can still tie it down to the distinction or separation, otherness, God being the supreme example of that. And so as we go through the class and explore the idea in different places in the Bible and things like that, it'll help some things, at least it has for me, it'll help some stuff make more sense because it gives you some logic behind why Israel couldn't eat lobster, you know? It helps make some of this weird stuff, especially in the Old Testament stuff that we're not as familiar with, it puts some context and logic behind it, and then suddenly, oh, well, actually, that makes a little bit more sense than I ever thought it did before. But it's not just the key to figuring out some of this strange stuff in the Old Testament. It's a concept that is central to what it means to be a Christian. So we referenced already, but I do want to look at Leviticus 11. Leviticus 11. This will ring familiar, but this is not normally the place we look to read this. Could I get somebody to read verses 44 through 47? And this is actually the chapter about clean and unclean animals and stuff like that. 44 through 47.
I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am holy. Do not make yourselves unclean by any creature that moves along the ground. I am the Lord who brought you up out of Egypt to be your God. Therefore be holy, because I am holy. These are the regulations concerning animals, birds, every living thing that moves about in the water, and every creature that moves along the ground. You must distinguish between the unclean and the clean, between the living creatures that may be eaten and those that may not be eaten.
So which part of that is the familiar part?
Be holy,
for I am holy. And then again, you see this idea, part of the being holy was God telling them, make a distinction, verse 47. Draw the line. But we know this from 1 Peter. He draws this same language in 1 Peter chapter 1, and we'll probably end up spending a good amount of time in 1 Peter, because the whole letter draws on this concept heavily. But the place where he quotes from Leviticus begins at verse 13. Can I get somebody to 14? Can I get somebody to read 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 14 through 16, please?
As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation, because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy.
Thank you. So we bring this same concept over and apply it to ourselves, and how far does it reach? What does it touch?
Everything.
Well, we're told we won't see God unless we have it.
Right, with strive for the holiness without which we will not see the Lord. So, you know, be holy in all your behavior. This is something that will reach to every single part of your life. And then, well, that we just referenced was Hebrews 12. Pursue peace with all men and the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. So it's not, you know, some far-off concept. It's something that we're told to pursue. Here's a goal, I suppose. Holiness. The call is issued to us, too. And so, as we do this, we will better understand who God is. And in His perfect holiness, we'll understand His Word better, His law, and why some of these things are right and wrong. And then it'll help us understand His expectations for our lives and why He expects those things of us. But maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think I have a little bit of a challenge with this class. Because the word holy, at least maybe in the broader culture, but maybe for some of us too, tends to fall into the category of words that's sort of a lofty religious word that we don't know exactly what it means, and I don't really understand what it means for me. It's just kind of a nebulous concept. But from what we've already said, I don't think it's a big stretch to say, and I'll explain why, but I don't think it's a big stretch to say that holiness may then be one of the most important and timely or relevant concepts that we can talk about right now. It's not, you know, some distant, lofty religious thing. It's something that has important bearing on our life right now. So let me ask you this. What does the world around us look like? What are the ideas that you see that sort of sit underneath some of the craziness that goes on around
us? Well, it's absolutely the opposite of Romans 12:1, what we're told in 12:1, so we can judge that. It's that the world sees things opposite of 12:1. We're told in Romans 12:1, beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service.
Right. It's the exact opposite of that. Good. What else?
Yeah, be authentic. Be who you really are.
Be authentic, who you really are. How do you do that?
Do what you want to do.
You do whatever you want to do, right?
Don't let it all hang out.
Yeah.
That's an old prayer.
Really digging back there, yeah.
It's all being taught.
It is.
To most people, themselves is God.
Right.
Self is God.
It's I do whatever I want because I feel like it. There's no reference to authority. It's do whatever you want with whoever you want, whenever you want, just whatever it takes to make you happy, you be you.
It's my body, I can do with it what I want.
Right. Yeah. And so part of that is a rejection of authority, but another way of seeing that same thing is a rejection of distinctions or a rejection of holiness to go another level deeper. Like the idea of a distinction between male and female is just repudiated in some circles. It's anathema to say that there is an essential fundamental difference between a man and a woman, and thus that difference has a bearing on the roles that they play. And so, you know, and at one point a long time ago, the goal is, with some of this, was to get rid of unjust distinctions, and that's a good thing. But now that's not the point. The people are trying to abolish any distinction. And you've taken it so far, and technology has advanced far enough, that men can be women and women can be men because there shouldn't even be a distinction between them at all.
And if you do that, you are a law within yourself, the scripture says.
Right. It's living as a law unto yourself. And then, you know, in a similar vein, this relates to something I've been reading with Jeff and Randy, but the idea of a distinction between modest and immodest is being done away with. Mm-hmm. See, you know, have you noticed how bad it's gotten? Like, it's hard to go out in public and not, you know, just be appalled at the things you see or, yeah. And part of the thinking that's underneath that, whether the people who are doing it know it or not, is the, at least, you know, the philosophers who are, you know, sit underneath a lot of this. The idea is not, let's move the line of modesty, it's let's erase the line altogether. There's no such thing as modesty anymore. And so it's a destruction of the distinction between modest and immodest. And then the idea of distinctions between relationships, done away with. You see, love is love, right? That's a call to get rid of distinctions between homosexual relationships and heterosexual relationships. And so one of the key failures that sits underneath a lot of the crazy stuff that we see in the world is a failure to distinguish. It's not move the line anymore, it's let's get rid of the line. And so another way to say this is that one of the key failures is the failure to understand holiness and then to be holy. And so that's why I suggest that this is an important and timely concept, because if you get this idea, well then all of the specific issues work themselves out, because you understand how to draw a righteous line as God would have us draw it.
Hunter. But I think even, so set aside the world, I think even we don't truly appreciate holiness. I guarantee you that for most of us, holiness is about what we don't do.
Right.
But to
to know to do good and not do it, that's sin as well. And so if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, then I'm not any more holy. I mean, yes, I've removed all the stuff I wasn't supposed to do, but if I haven't put in its place the stuff I'm supposed to be doing,
right,
I've not become holy like God is holy.
Right.
And so I think even set aside the world, we don't do a good job of understanding true holiness, that if I'm trying to eliminate sin, it's not just the negative sins,
mm-hmm,
it's also the lack of doing what is right.
Right. Right.
And I think that was part of what they were being taught in the Old Testament was,
mm-hmm,
it's not just don't eat lobster, it was eat this clean animal because it's going to help you remember what it, you know, it was positive things they were supposed to be doing as well, and not just the negative things they were supposed to eliminate from their lives.
Right, it's not a purely negative concept. It puts things in place of other things. Thank you. And so, if we want to be the city set on a hill and shine the light of a holy God, we have to have a grasp on this idea and be willing to be God's holy people. But to do that, we have to know what actually counts as holy and unholy. And so to know that, we have to know the God who defines holiness. The God who is himself declared holy, holy, holy. It's not just a song, it's the way it's said by the cherubim in Isaiah and then again in Revelation. And so that's where I want to spend the rest of our time tonight, maybe some next week too. What does it mean for God to be holy? And so I'm giving myself up to you now. Scriptures, examples, thoughts, I mean, whatever you want to say here, I'll be glad for you.
Well, one of the things I struggle with on this word is, the word as God uses it, it's an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm nowhere close to the absolute that's being described by holy.
Right.
Which means something else has to get in play in order for me to even have a hope of getting to that holy statement, mm-hmm, that God uses that would allow me access to heaven. And that just makes my brain hurt because I'm never going to reach that absoluteness,
mm-hmm,
that holy is represented by God. And so now I'm looking for ways to get there, okay? And I know that I sin. Well, that's an absolute showstopper right there from that word you have on the board. Now how do I get back? And so that's what the whole rest of the Bible is talking about, is,
mm-hmm,
how to bridge that gap. But when you think about who we are as individuals and living in a world like we live in, that looks like galaxies away from where I am.
Right.
We use what you just said as an excuse for,
right,
the way we live.
Yep.
Jeff has said some things that make me think about the fact that God is the great I Am. He is, no matter what,
mm-hmm,
whether it's creation or not, he's there, he is. And that he created everything, so he is separate from creation. I almost get the part idea that he's part of all that when he's really separate from that. And the only way he's part of that is the interaction that he wants to have with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense or not. But,
yeah.
So whatever he says goes. I mean, so he's separate from anything that he's made.
Yeah, thank you. Rick?
Yeah, I was saying a lot along your lines. And he's also, he is so holy, he's separate from anything else called God.
Mm-hmm.
He is, right, you know, he has separated himself from anything else in that, and he expects us to separate ourselves from anything that is not dedicated to the true and the only God.
Right. Thank you, Rick.
Let's take a look. Pardon me, my eyes aren't working too well tonight. Somebody else read. Let's take a look at Ephesians, the first chapter, and start there about 3 and run down through about 7. I'm sorry, eyes aren't working very well.
You want me to read 3 through 7 for you?
Yeah, I got glaucoma. I'm sorry.
that by revelation there was made known to me the mystery, as I wrote before in brief. By referring to this, when you read, you can understand my insight into the mystery of Christ, which was in other generations was not made known to the sons of men, as it has now been revealed to his holy apostles and prophets in the Spirit. To be specific, the Gentiles are fellow heirs and fellow members of the body and fellow partakers of the promise in Christ Jesus through the gospel, of which I was made a minister according to the gift of God's grace, which was given to me according to the working of his power.
Now, what was those verses?
Ephesians 1:3-6.
Oh, I thought you thought that was chapter 3. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great verse to read.
I'll do it again.
That's why it's having you read it.
Chapter 1:3-6. I'm on board now. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ, just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we would be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us to adoption as sons through Jesus Christ to himself, according to the kind intention of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, which he freely bestowed on us in the Beloved. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses according to the riches of his grace.
That encompasses what we've been talking about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I'll let
I mean, two places I kind of think about is like the Song of Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when God just decides to tell Job how it is.
That's a good way of putting it.
I mean, both of those to me show why he's holy. His power, his strength, his loving kindness. It's not just, I mean, it's his creation, his...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's indescribable.
Right.
It's a pretty good job in Job.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you pointed out the Song of Moses, too, because I had spent a little bit of time there, too. God's power isn't something we might normally associate with his holiness, but it seems to be associated here and in Hannah's song in 1 Samuel 2. Exodus 15, it's in verse 11. Who is like you among the gods, O Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in praises, working wonders? You stretched out your right hand and the earth swallowed them. And, you know, it's... because this song is, you know, right after they just crossed the Red Sea. And so it's all about God's power. But part of that is his holiness. Maybe not something we normally... two things we normally put together.
I mean, the word that just keeps popping up and keeps coming back to me is the word chosen or chose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God chose us, like just what we read from,
yeah,
from Gaynor. God chose us before, so what else did God choose before? God probably chose the way he wanted to be worshipped. He chose his people. He chose who he wanted to lead his people. He chose what was clean and unclean. I mean,
mm-hmm,
everything was a choice, and it's the same choices we can make to be, you know, holy and separate, and, you know, choose the language we use and choose what we consume and choose who we're with, and I mean, it's all,
mm-hmm,
choice. So just, I mean, God chose these things, we need to choose these things too.
Yeah.
One of the things, and go back to what I was saying a little earlier, one of the areas that I think gives us at least a glimpse into this, but it's still really hard to get your head wrapped around, is the separation of Jesus from God during his time on the cross. Because at that moment when God turns his back on Jesus, for the lack of a better term, we get to witness what sinful nature and holiness, what that looks like when they clash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And when they clash, God cannot allow that in his presence. And so even if it was his son who was carrying everybody else's sins, not even his own, God could not allow that to come into his presence, even for his own son. And that's the closest example I can think of that gives us an idea of exactly how God looks at this and the impact that sin and corruption and all those things have on us individually as we try to get to that word holy.
One of the things that's kind of come up is that God's holiness makes him by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one that is holy. And what did he do in Genesis 2? He created man to be a companion to him. And not being, and of course man mankind broke that companionship. Mm-hmm. And if we hadn't broken, if mankind hadn't broken that companionship, we would have the same relationship Adam and Eve had.
Right. So there is another place that I think works that idea well, and I want to save that for next week because it deserves more time than 4 minutes. That's Isaiah 6. So that was already on the plan, but it certainly is now for next week. I do want to look at Isaiah 6. But it works with this idea of the unholy and the holy and what happens when they bump into each other.
But and I'll just throw this out because it also goes with Isaiah 6. There's other passages. There is some connection, though, between God's holiness and his goodness and his love. Because like in Isaiah mm-hmm. 6, I mean, it announces holy, 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 but then what does he want? He wants somebody to go talk to his people.
Yeah.
You know, and then he cleanses that person. So, I mean, there's that, and, you know, there's other passages you could also look at that says it's not purity just to be pure. Mm-hmm. There still is a desire. It leads you to do something.
Right.
I mean, you're not set apart just to be away from everything. Mm-hmm. You're set apart to then establish right relationships and to engage in right conduct. But that right conduct is goodness and kindness and mercy and love and long-suffering.
Right.
And when we're doing that as well, that's us also being holy as God is holy.
Right. It has. I don't know if that word means anything to anybody. That's the English translation of a Greek word, or transliteration, telos, that sometimes is translated end, but or perfect, but it's sort of a directional idea, and that gets used in like philosophical circles and stuff. Like it's to an end. So holiness isn't just because. It's to an end. It has a telos. It's going somewhere. And so then it has implications of what you do to actually move towards that purpose.
So one word that's really helpful in building on that too is goal. There's a goal that you're striving mm-hmm. for.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, I was thinking of it as holy being the standard, just like God is the standard.
Mm-hmm.
So our conversation should be toward being holy, which is the standard of God has already set. So that's what he wants our conversation, our being, to be for him and
Absolutely.
Move in that direction.
Yeah, I like that word standard. He wants to say something in the last 2 minutes.
I think about the world tends to think When we say holy, they tend to think that we're trying to say we're high and mighty or better than or
mm-hmm.
looking down upon, and that's not it. I think
right.
the image I have in my head is more of an inner circle
mm-hmm.
that's separated, and we're trying to expand that circle and bring more people into that circle.
Yeah.
You know, and looking out and as opposed to looking down.
Right.
And that. We're all on the same level as far as where we are as humans, but that we want to get that circle bigger.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that may partially be just because, you know, the phrase holier than thou is just in the regular use, and so it starts bumping into that idea, but that's not it at all. And so part of the goal is to move away from any connotation of that and see it for all of the beauty and glory that this concept really contains within itself. So, before we go out for a couple of songs, let's have a prayer real quick. Would you pray with me, please? God, we're thankful for your words. We're thankful that you are a holy God, that we can trust you in all your holiness to be perfect and just and righteous. And we pray that you would help us in this study as we begin it. Help us to learn about what it means to live in holiness, to be a holy people for you. And then help us to draw others to become holy to you as well. Help us to live holy lives every day as we go out into the world. We're thankful for your words that teach us how to do it, and we're thankful through your Son, Jesus. Amen.